started here because I have a lot to cover. Also, unfortunately, couldn't get video working on my laptop, and my robot is up on tail scale. So I'll do the demo after for people who are interested. I'm really sorry about that. We tried a bunch of times earlier. Okay, so let's get started. So this is my robot. These are some of my other robots. And I also actually get paid to work on other people's robots, which is just like the best job ever, like FR. I get to work on big industrial arms, agricultural robots, Spot, spacecraft, hotel robots. It's great. But let's go back to this robot. This is a HackerBot. It's produced by a startup, a small startup in Colorado called HackerBot Industries. The founder is a colleague of mine, Ian Bernstein. You might remember or know him from being a founder of the Sphero robot ball, if anybody remembers that, or the Misty robot. He likes doing social robots, and so he came to me about 2 years ago. We met up at a conference in Boulder, and he's like, I'm thinking about doing another social robot. It'd be kind of like a turtle bot kind of thing, and, you know, be expressive, and, you know, told me about it. I was like, sure, you know. He said, I'm going to do a crowdfunder, and I was like, sure, you can't get turtle bots anymore. They stopped making the Create 3. You know, there's just not a cheap hackable base out there. Everything, other robots have gotten to be like $2,000 to $4,000, like $4,000 or $5,000. I love the Leotech guys, and they raised for their latest version, they raised the price from like $2,500 to $5,000. I'm like, okay, great, a cheap robot base. Yeah, sure, sign me up. And then he mentioned that it was going to be like basically a Roomba knockoff. He found this company in China that was making a Roomba knockoff that had a built-in LiDAR, and it is all integrated into the Tuya's system, and you just push a button and it wakes up, and the first thing it does is rolls around your house and it maps out the space, even before it goes out and cleans. And then you can... And that saves the map internally. And I was like, okay, I have to have one of these. You're going to go off and do all this AI stuff. It's going to have an arm. It's going to be expressive. I just want it for the mapping. I mean, if I could like just get it for that and figure out how to get the map out of there, sign me up. And so he helped me out a lot with like getting the commands. Figuring out the commands and stuff for it, and this is basically what it does. This is my goal, was a one-touch mapping utility robot so that I could map a space and not have to like follow around with a joystick in one hand and teleop and a laptop in the other, and I also spend time and your hand gets tired and you're falling in and out of Wi-Fi and so just the idea of having this thing, you push a button, it goes around and does it for you. And then it's usable for other robots, like your Ross robots, which I have a lot of. I just really, really wanted to do that. So the thing here is robot generates its own onboard map. It auto-colors, figures out, it has some sort of algorithm inside for figuring out where what it think a room is, and then it stores that as a bitmap in its own custom format, and then you have to have your phone, and you get this app called Tuya, which I guess is like if you're not doing Siri and you're not doing some other home environment things, you use Tuya because they control, like, they're also from China, and they have like air conditioners and rice cookers and window shades, and just like everything is hooked into that. And then you could also, it turns out that there is a plugin for Home Assistant. There is like an integration with Tuya. But I looked at that, and it turns out that they're using, Home Assistant is using the Tuya SDK, which is great, except that they want like a lot of money to buy a license for the Tuya SDK. And then Home Assistant is also its own lifestyle, which I appreciate, but I just kind of wanted to get the map off the robot. So that invites some hacking. Like all good open source or open-ish hacking robots, there's a serial port. Ian has added not a teensy, but a CUNY-Pi ARM board from Adafruit onto it to make the serial interfacing a little bit easier, so you don't have to play with the actual wires, but you know, I've done that before, and the basic way that you talk to it is you send it hex commands, and it spits out data about, like, are the bumpers activated? What is the battery status? And this also turns out that there was a map, a command that they did not document that was also, like, display the map, and this is how the map gets from the robot, from the flash on the robot, over to Tuya. It's all done over wireless. So we figured that out. Then, let me just go back one. That led to, realizing you can get this map. This is my apartment in San Francisco. It's a Victorian, so if you know anything, it's a single long hallway with rooms off the side of it. So it looks a little weird, but that's really like the top part there is the entrance, go down to the hallway, and then there's like a main room, and then there's the kitchen. So that's the map. So you grab the map as a byte stream off the serial port, start looking for headers, start looking for repeating patterns. I actually did some work on the XV11, the old Nitto LiDAR for controlling the LiDAR, and had it dump just from, again, serial and interpreting hex codes, got it to dump out LiDAR data. So I wasn't entirely unused to this. It's kind of a pain, but so we found the header and then realized that it is an occupancy grid, because all the thing is doing with the map is that it's cleaning, and so it just needs to know where the obstacles, where the boundaries and things are. So it's actually pretty simple, but convert it to grayscale, and we still have, so here's like the interesting part, or getting into the interesting part. We're able to convert it to grayscale, but it's still encoding some color. The white part, the white region is actually part of the image native coming off of the robot, which is going to be our problem. So it encodes the color for user convenience, but actually when it goes around and navigates, it doesn't have any concept of the rooms. It's just like you're just supposed to on the phone point, but it doesn't actually really matter operationally. And this is a little bit different from ROS, where it's just a single layer, and everything in the single layer, it, you know, represents everything. ROS abstracts things like rooms and boundaries and, you know, user preferences to other layers. You have global cost map, you have a local cost map, and then you have an inflation layer, and then you have, you know, you can set waypoints and you can customize it. First thing I realized is that because ROS encodes white as open, explored and open, the boundary, just where the map is the robot would consider that open. Your ROS robot would consider that open. So the entire image is just this open space. So this is where the conversion starts. I had like this media idea, hey, I'll use OpenCV. OpenCV detects edges. It has some, you know, has like cami and fine contours and, fine poly and a bunch of other things. Well, as I say, you know, now you have two problems or n problems. This is not going to be an easy solution because I realized really pretty quickly because cami edge detection is really, it's great. It tries to find an edge for everything. It tries to find a line or an edge for everything. Even the tiniest little feature it thinks is an edge. And what do you get with LiDAR? You get a bunch of, if you've ever like worked with ROS and with LiDAR, you get a bunch of these little spikes, a bunch of these little edges just natively. And it turns out that's actually not a ROS thing, that's a LiDAR thing because the rays point through and they all get, oh, hey, maybe that is some area that is unexplored. Maybe that is some area, you know, you don't want to just throw away things. You take in everything and you hold on to it for later and maybe you'll explore that area or maybe it'll just be this. That's really just hard to filter out with cami. You end up doing a lot of carpet fitting, a lot of tuning, and it still just didn't work properly. I ended up creating boundaries where there weren't any before, and I tried a couple other things, like, you know, defining a kernel to do defining several kernel operations and using some of those functions in OpenCV. That didn't really work either because it wants to apply it to the whole image or to the whole subsection. Now I'm down to defining subsections, which is, you know, just epicycles upon epicycles. Turns out, if OpenCV says no, go ask NumPy. And if you're familiar with NumPy, it and OpenCV are just like this. They're just like the bestest buddies. And it turns out that to NumPy, an image is just an array shape of, it's a 2x3x n matrix. Anything that you could do with like machine learning, neural network model training data, where you're selecting out your weights and you're selecting out your parameters and things like that, you can do the same thing with an image. It just doesn't care. It just shows up as it takes a bitmap. It's just an array of data. I went poking around in the API, and I found this numpy.argware, which selects out anything that is a non-zero value. And that turned out to be one of the answers because you select out, if we go back here to the gray, now you can just, I can select out where all the boundaries are and get that as a get that as a separate array, start marching through that. So apply a six-way kernel where you're looking at, like, for an edge, you're looking at to the left, to the right, up, down, and down the diagonals, and just kind of march around the entire inside of the image and find the boundaries, get to this, and you get the same map, but now it has a black boundary around it. And now that we've done that, you could alpha out the white, you can invert the colors and just kind of do with it, you know, whatever you need. And so we've, at this point, we've downloaded the byte stream, converted it to binary, which gives you a bitmap. We've flushed all the user-defined color regions into a single region, and I've got a border. And so now this is ready to make available as a ROS class map. And I found that also, like, this worked well enough that I actually cleaned up the apartment a bit, and I got a lot more free space, and so now you can actually see the rooms better, and you can see some artifacts, and so, you know, that's another thing is, you know, it's like inspired to clean up my room, because actually this is, that is, Barring the demo, I can take questions because this is pretty much about it. This is up on GitHub for people to look at and play around with. I actually use this to map out my co-working space in Oakland, California. I have a kind of an appointment there as a robot assistant residence at a hardware incubator called Circuit Launch. So it's all up on my GitHub, and then there's the HackerBot industries link. So if you there, he's still selling HackerBots, I'm currently also looking for work. Always, you know, contracting life, always looking for interesting projects, interesting companies to help with their robots with. Come find me. I have cards if you're interested in that. And then wanted to pass on some thanks to FOSDEM for having me here. I Circuit Launch family in Oakland for giving me the space to work on robots and access to tools and 3D printers and the kind of things that let me build my robots. And then the Homebrew Robotics Club, Silicon Valley, who I've been a member of for just like years and years. They got me started on, convinced me that I could build robots. I was only a software guy at one point. And then also the character CV, T-R-O-N-S, and also people like you for coming and listening to me. And I think with that, I have a few minutes for questions. Definitely come see me afterwards if you're interested in looking through the code or if you want to see it actually work as a demo. Hi, yes.
This question, does it work? Yes.
Can we see a picture of your body?
You know, I've got it on there. yeah, but sure, it's a typical San Francisco. I don't know if you're familiar with like the Victorian style where it's a really, really super long hallway. It's that. It's a little bit of a mess, but you know, that's where I build my robots. Anyone else?
So you also used the Velodyne, so did you also compare the accuracy between both?
I'm sorry, what?
You also showed that you use a Velodyne LiDAR in your apartment.
Uh-huh.
Did you, like, compare the accuracy?
Yeah, it's, let me go back to that slide here. So you can see that the Velodyne, I mean, it's just like, it's an amazing piece of tech. It's like, it takes about like maybe 15 or 20 minutes for the HackerBot with the consumer LiDAR, which is like a, you know,
like it's like an RP LiDAR kind of a light. It's about maybe 15 or 20
minutes for it to roll around and to map that. The Velodyne just did this in like 5 minutes because the distance, I mean, this is why it shows up on autonomous vehicles and AMRs and things like that. It just shoots down, like, I had it, like, starting here, and it just shot down to the end of the hallway. And so I did it in, like, 5 minutes. And you can see the, I can compare, like, accuracy in terms of, like, you know, centimeters or, you know, things. But I noticed that it just, I got much cleaner, just the plain map. I got much cleaner lines. There's much, it's just much higher resolution, like per degree turn. It just saw everything. I mean, like that, those rays down there at the bottom, that's into the back of the laundry room. It saw that, like it just comes across the, you know, the second barrier into the big room. And it just saw everything. So it was almost like no point in really doing much more with it because it's like, okay, I got a map in 5 minutes. I actually ended up moving, that was for a client project, and actually ended up moving it over to my co-working space because it turned out my apartment was just like too small. It wasn't useful for the kind of data that we were doing, or trying to kind of data we were trying to get.
Cool, thanks.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you. Oh, not a problem. Thank you.
My question is, so you said that the HackerBot has a short-range LiDAR and it moves to be able to get everything in range, let's say.
Right.
Do you know how the robot locates itself?
I think it has like an onboard IMU, and it has some wheel encoders. It wants to, like, one of the things that it does after it's done the initial mapping is that it seems to consult the map that it just made, because they ask you to, like, you know, a consumer device, so they say, hey, put it right here and push the button, and they want you to start it on the base. So it has a little dock. So it uses the map that it just made, and it rehomes itself towards the base, and then it does kind of like the classic Roomba docking where there's some sort of an IR, you know, and then it docks itself. And then it either charges, or if you push the button again, then it goes out and actually, it realizes it has a map and it goes out, actually goes out and cleans. So just like my experience, I haven't like tapped into the serial port while I was doing all of this. But my guess is that it is localized, it knows kind of where it started from, and then it just localizes back to that, and then it finds the base, stores that somewhere in memory, and then it runs with that, because once the map is done, it finds the base pretty easily, just again. So I think there's like, it makes the map, and then it's kind of like relocalizing sort of on the spot. It's all kind of locked away in, you know, it's a little RTOS.
Thanks, for me it's quite impressive that it manages to stitch correctly all the LiDAR information, because for example on carpet, if you have carpet on the floor,
yeah,
the wheels slip all the time.
I don't want to say other than that's kind of China. I mean, that's the level of hardware and devices that they produce. Don't ask me about the actual software, you know, like the user software, but the firmware, that's about average for devices that I've seen from them for some of the arms. The mechanisms and the control, you know, the onboard control firmware is actually really quite impressive. And it's like, this is why it's so hard to beat. It's a consumer product. For $150 US, it's just, why would you even try to compete with that in the marketplace? It just does it.
Thanks.